Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with William Fink. We're with another installation of the Christogenos Show. And last week, we started out with the first two chapters of Jeremiah. And today, we'll be continuing, starting with chapter 3, verse 1. Bill, do you have any, wrap-up or comments on the first two chapters so far?
Well, it's just a short paragraph. Just to remind us of some things that we shouldn't lose scope of, right? Jeremiah began his prophetic ministry at a young age in the 13th year of Hosea, which, according to most popular chronologies, is about 627 B.C. The Judah that Jeremiah addresses are almost exclusively those inhabitants and refugees in Jerusalem, which the Assyrians failed to capture about 80 years beforehand. We can't lose sight of the fact that most of Judah was taken away by the Assyrians.
Yes.
And these people in Jerusalem had, over these 80 years, expanded and gone out into those cities that were destroyed and rebuilt some of them, and likewise.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see later that in Jeremiah, the order of the scrolls of his book varies tremendously between the Septuagint and the Masoretic text. Jeremiah 1 lays forth Jeremiah's commission to tear down and then to build and to plant, and we see that's defined in Jeremiah chapter 18 as relating to nations. In Jeremiah chapter 2, and we'll discuss what Jeremiah planted later, right?
Okay.
In Jeremiah chapter 2, we see that Yahweh had chastised Judah above everything else for race mixing.
Right.
A theme which will continue as we begin chapter 3. Not all of the people, otherwise there'd be no reason to punish them yet.
Right.
Not all of the people of Jerusalem were race mixed, but many of the people had been doing so, and they had become, as Jeremiah explains in chapter 2, broken cisterns and an alien plant unto God.
Right.
There are good Judahite figs, as we will clearly see later in the book. Even amongst the inhabitants of Jerusalem, we have good figs, and there are bad figs,
right?
And those bad figs have to be the produce of the race mixing being described here.
Okay.
We also saw in chapter 2 that sinners have neither recourse for punishment nor an entrance for prayers unto Yahweh. We saw that exact same thing when we covered Ezekiel, right?
Right.
And finally, we saw that in our sin, we are also responsible for the blood of our brethren when our nation is chastised by God.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, all three of these major prophets, Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Jeremiah, all counsel against race mixing, and they all tell us that the sinner is not heard by Yahweh. So do
Peter, Paul, and Jude, so
right.
Nothing's changed.
Right. So there's no difference in the message between the Old Testament and the New Testament. As a matter of fact, the covenant theology, which none of the mainstream churches teach, nor do the Jews teach it, because if they would have to totally ignore Jeremiah chapter 31, which we'll get to, I think, in detail in this series here. That's the one chapter which really defines the terms of the new covenant. None of the churches pay any attention to the terms of the new covenant. They just make things up.
Covenant theology is the only legitimate theology.
That's right.
It's very clear in the Bible that without the covenant, you have no relationship with God.
That's right.
And if you're not a party to the covenant, forget it.
That's right. That's right. Okay. All right. Chapter 3, verse 1. They say, if a man put away his wife and she go from him and become another man's, shall he return to her again? Shall not that land be greatly polluted? But you have played the harlot with many lovers, yet return again to me, says Yahweh. Okay, so what's he saying right here?
Well, I have a lot of notes on this passage.
Okay.
Yahweh here is invoking the law of the life, of the wife.
Right.
As explained by Paul in Romans chapter 7, and I'd like to get into that a little.
Okay.
The law precludes a husband from taking back an adulterous wife.
Right.
Yet Yahweh here will devise a way that Israel may return to him.
Mm.
He has to know his law, right, that he's
sure.
handed down. Now, he promised in Jeremiah chapter 31 that Israel would live. That's because that promise is important because the nation, as an adulterous wife, was liable under the law to death.
Right.
And the way for Yahweh to reconcile himself to Israel was to die as the Christ, as Paul explains in Romans chapter 11. Chapter 7. Are you ignorant, brethren? I speak to those who know the law, that the law lords over a man for as long a time as he should live. For a woman married to a living husband is bound by law, but if the husband should die, she is discharged from the law of the husband. So then as the husband is living, she would be labeled an adulteress if she were found with another man, the false gods and the other nations, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if the husband should die, she is free from the law. She is not an adulteress being found with another man.
Not free from the whole law. He's only talking about the law of divorce here, right?
Right. The law of divorce, the law of the husband.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. And these Judeo-Christians take that verse and, that means every single law ever written, right? That's how they interpret these verses, totally out of context.
Well, no, Yahweh died to fulfill the letter of the law of marriage in the Old Testament so that he could take Israel back.
Right.
Otherwise, he could never be married to Israel. Yet, Hosea 2:7 prophesies that, quote, and she, meaning Israel, shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them, and she shall seek them, but she shall not find them. How could you find an idol, right? How do you find a false god?
Right.
And she shall and she shall say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then it was better with me than now. That was the coming to Christianity of the Israel or Aryan nations.
Right.
Israel being married to Yahweh committed adultery in the worship of false gods, which also involved the following alien customs: obedience to alien laws and committing of other acts which violated Yahweh's law, especially fornication.
Right.
And under the law, this made Israel put out of the house of the husband, the Assyrian and Babylonian deportations, liable for death. That's the penalty for adultery under Leviticus 20:10 and Deuteronomy 22:22.
Right. And Jesus confirmed that.
And Yahweh promised not to make an end of Israel, and that seems to be contrary to his own law to take Israel back. Well, this creates a dilemma, since under the law, the husband cannot take back an adulterous wife. It's defined in Deuteronomy 24:4 as an abomination and a sin.
Right.
Yahweh is not a sinner. Yahweh either divorces Israel and Judah, as we shall see here, and then before he takes her back, he has to die. That's the whole mystery of grace in the New Testament.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. So, but it says here, shall not that land be greatly polluted? And is he talking about also divorcing that land away? Because obviously, after Yahshua was crucified, there hasn't been any return of true Israel or true Judah to that land.
Although the land was supposed to be, it's prophecy throughout Ezekiel and the other prophets that land was polluted,
right,
and it's supposed to be inhabited with demons and beasts until it's cleansed. Right?
Right. Yes. Okay. Verse 2. Lift up your eyes to the high places and see where you have not been lain with. Okay.
Well, right. Where didn't you have sex?
That's right.
Where didn't you play the war for these alien races?
Right.
That's what it's saying.
Yeah. And you know, as you've brought out several times in this series, the pagan rituals of the Canaanites always involved multiracial sexual activity.
Don't they today?
Yeah.
What's
they
changed?
Still do. Absolutely.
Nothing's changed. Just turn your television on. Nothing's changed. No, don't turn your television on, please.
Yeah. you'll just get polluted, right?
Well, no, it's fully evident in the Canaanite, the Jews are the Canaanites of the Old Testament. And now that their morals and their social standards are have permeated through our society, look at the society that we have.
Yeah.
It was no different 2,500 years ago, 2,600 years ago.
Right, right.
Not one bit. Well, we have more technology today, so the disease spreads faster.
Right.
But it was no different.
Exactly. Okay. Therefore, the showers have been withheld, and there has been no latter rain, and you had a whore's forehead. You refuse to be ashamed. And, of course,
now that whore's forehead is really an idiom meaning that it can't be missed or it is quite clear that one is a whore, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they had the scarlet letter it would carve on your forehead, right? A for adultery, right?
Well,
I'll get that term later.
Well, I would like to read the Septuagint version of this verse, though, says, "And thou did retain many shepherds for a stumbling block to thyself.
Uh-huh.
Thou had a whore's face. Thou did uh-huh. become shameless toward all." It's
right.
A little bit suffering.
Yeah. Okay, if 22/6 starts attacking people again, I'm just going to have to mute the whole, block the whole chat room. And I think you all know who he is. So we'll just take it from there. Okay. All right, so a whore's forehead, and typically you can tell a prostitute by her swagger, right? By her swagger and mannerisms and all that stuff. You know, she typically is not like a graceful woman like Grace Kelly, right? She's got to look more like Beyonce.
Wasn't Grace Kelly a race mixer?
Yeah. You can usually tell, right? Their mannerisms go with their profession. Verse 4, "Will you not from this time cry to me, my father? You are the guide of my youth." Okay, so we're supposed to, when will we ever cry and say, "Father, we want to come back to you"? Verse 5, "Will he reserve his anger forever? Will he keep it to the end? Behold, you have spoken and done evil things as you could. Yahweh said also to me in the days of Josiah the king, have you seen that which backsliding Israel has done? She has gone up upon every high mountain and under every green tree, and there has played the harlot." Okay, so both Israel and Judah have played the harlot. Verse 7, "And I said, after she had done all these things, turn you to me, but she returned not, and her treacherous sister Judah saw it." Okay, so anybody who wants to suggest that Joseph, the descendants of Joseph, are better than the descendants of Judah, you know, you can't make any case for that. Verse 8.
Right. Two notes. First, the worship in groves and high places of so-called European paganism is really the religion of the Canaanites. That's where it came from.
Yeah.
And Yahweh here is talking about the children of Israel of the dispersion. And first, Jeremiah must have known who and where they were, right? That's absolutely evident. But we're going to see verses later on in the chapter that Israel was supposed to forget Yahweh, that they weren't supposed to. They were supposed to stay in paganism, and that's foreseen until the time of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And people ask me all the time, why didn't the ancient Scythians honor Yahweh? Why don't we see anything about the Old Testament religion in the ancient Scythians? Well, we're told, first, they departed from the temple religion. The ten tribes did. They departed from the temple religion right after the break of the kingdom,
mm-hmm.
right? We saw that with Jeroboam and Rehoboam, and as soon as the kingdom split up, they started worshiping golden calves, right?
Right.
And
exactly.
they were supposed to forget Yahweh, and we'll see that as this chapter progresses.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Jeroboam was afraid that if the Israelites went down to Judah, they would just stay and not come back to Israel.
Right, he was afraid he would lose control over them.
Exactly.
The temple priests.
Exactly, yeah. And so it became a political, the rituals became a political football, okay?
We see that. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
we see that same thing today, where the government wants to control religion
so
that it can control the people.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Verse 8. "And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, And, you know, of course, the Judeo-Christians always want to talk about spiritual adultery, right? And we're talking about whores, prostitutes, adultery, fornication, pollution.
Well, that's the only way you become a strange plant is when you mix your race.
Right.
I mean, how else could that be?
Yeah.
How else could you have sin that can't be washed off?
Yes.
If you mix your, and that's what's being spoken of in conjunction here with whores and prostitution and adultery and fornication. So it's absolutely clear this is describing the decay of the nation in race mixing, which the race mixing is caused by false religions. Today we have false religions. We have a Christianity that's been totally purchased by the Jews.
Yeah.
And it's not Christianity at all. It's some false religion set up in the name of Christianity to make life comfortable for the Jews so that they could corrupt the whole nation.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, Jesus in Matthew chapter 24 says it shall be as in the days of Noah. And, of course, the real problem was there was race mixing between the Adamites and the non-Adamites. And that's what we're having again today. It's become an epidemic. A total epidemic, okay? But let me read all of verse 8 again. And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce, yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. All right, so both houses are playing the harlot, no doubt about it. Verse 9.
I'd like to talk, before we move on, I know I'm a pain in the neck, right? I could turn it up. I'd like to talk about this for a minute, because there's something real important going on here.
Uh-huh.
And we have to understand that Israel, it says explicitly that Yahweh gave Israel a bill of divorce, right? And Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. And the end result is that even though after the rest of Judah was deported, nobody was around to record it.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh must have divorced Judah also, or he breaks his own law.
Right.
All right? And there's evidence of that, and I'd like to quote a couple of passages, Jeremiah 33:24. And this to me is important because there are identity ministers who insist that Yahweh never divorced Judah. And basically, if you accuse Yahweh of not having divorced Judah, you are saying that Yahweh committed the sin that Adam committed, right?
Okay.
But when he didn't divorce Eve, right?
Right, right.
And basically, Jeremiah 33:24 states thusly, "Considerest thou not what this people has spoken, saying the two families, Israel and Judah, which Yahweh has chosen, he even cast them off. Thus they have despised my people, that they should no more be a nation before them." And Zechariah 10:6 says, "And I will strengthen the house of Judah, and I will save the house of Joseph, and I will bring them again to place them, for I have mercy upon them, that they shall not be as though, I'm sorry, that they shall be as though I had not cast them off." And that shows that they were both cast off equally. That Yahweh divorced them both, because that's the meaning of divorce, right? It is to put away. And that's the, when you look at the Greek and the Hebrew, that's the actual meaning of the word. And if there was a new covenant to be made with Judah and Israel, and Judah was not divorced, that then why is there a need for a new covenant with Judah as
right.
well as Israel? And if we claim that Judah was not divorced, do we not accuse Yahweh of that same sin which Adam committed and of having violated his own word of
mm-hmm.
Deuteronomy 24:4?
Yeah.
If both houses were put away, they were both divorced.
Yeah.
And anyone who contends with this is acting the part of the Pharisee.
Right.
And holding Yahweh to a legalism because no explicit bill of divorce, quote unquote, was ever announced for Judah in the prophets. But yet it is indeed that Judah was clearly put away.
Yes, yes. Well, it brings up the interesting question of could Adam have divorced Eve and asked Yahweh to make another one for him? Right?
Yes, he could have put her away.
Yeah.
If Adam wanted to do the right thing when Eve gave Adam the fruit, Genesis 3:6, and Adam ate too, well, Adam shouldn't have ate too.
Mm-hmm.
Adam shouldn't have also ate, I should say, in order to make sense, right?
Yeah.
And he should have appealed to Yahweh that Eve sinned, and hey, this woman you got me, she screwed up. I can't give me another one.
But I'm turning her in for a new model,
happened.
Right?
Well, right, that didn't happen, so sin entered the society through Adam.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, very good. Verse 9, and it came to pass through the likeness of her whoredom, which would be, you know, likeness of being, right? She took her whoredom too lightly, that she defiled the land and committed adultery with stones and with stocks. Now, what does this mean, with stones and with stocks?
The representations of the idols, right?
Right. So we're talking idolatry here, in addition to the actual fornication going on here. Verse 10.
Right, the images of the gods carved out of stones and sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say that was, you know, the Greeks had these images of Athena, right?
Yes.
That they swore fell from heaven. Okay,
yes.
And they set these images up in temples, and that they insisted that these images. There's a name for them. I think it's Zoanon, Xoanon, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, that they swore to, right in the poets. It's all the way down through the 4th and 5th centuries BC, and into Strabo and Diodorus that these wooden images of this goddess fell from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
They even say that Zeus threw the image out of heaven.
Right. All kinds of stuff falls out of the sky.
Yeah, well, they took them and put them in temples and worshiped them, and probably made a lot of oppression of the people and extracted a lot of money from them by claiming these idols fell from heaven.
Right, right, yeah. It's like the Catholic Church still does that by selling these trinkets.
but idols, right? I'm just trying to illustrate the worship of wooden images in the ancient world.
Sure, sure.
It really did happen.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, verse 10, and yet for all this her treacherous sister Judah has not turned to me with her whole heart, but feignedly, says Yahweh. And Yahweh said to me, the backsliding Israel has justified herself more than treacherous Judah. So, in other words, in one verse he's saying, Judah is more treacherous than Israel. In another verse, he's saying Israel is more treacherous than Judah. They're trying to outdo each other. Verse 12, go and proclaim these words toward the north and say, return, you backsliding Israel, says Yahweh, and I will not cause my anger to fall upon you, for I am merciful, says Yahweh, and I will not keep anger forever. Well, obviously, he was merciful to us at the crucifixion and forgave us our sins. Verse 13, only acknowledge your iniquity. And the Judeo-Christians refuse to acknowledge their iniquity because they pretend there's no law and therefore there can't be any repentance.
Well, even a lot of people in Christian identity claim to be perfect according to the law.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all liars, right? I mean, we've all broken the law. We've all violated the law.
But
we've all been sinners at some point in our life.
Right, for sure.
And the Judeo-Christians, that they want to keep on sinning, so they have no law. They don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. So they're definitely, they will not acknowledge their iniquity, and certainly the Jews will never acknowledge their iniquity because they have interpreted the law to mean that they don't have to obey any law, and therefore they can do no wrong. So we have, between the Jews and Judeo-Christians, we have a bunch of lawbreakers who I don't see any hope for them, unless certainly the Judeo-Christians of the Israelite race turn and repent, which they're not about to do at the moment. So they still have to wake up to, number one, who they are and get back to practicing the true law. Okay, so again, only acknowledge your iniquity that you have transgressed against Yahweh your God, and have scattered your ways to the strangers under every green tree, and you have not obeyed my voice, says Yahweh. We have to admit that we have been sinners, and are sinners. Verse 14, turn, O backsliding children, says Yahweh, for I am married to you. And, well, now wait a minute here. He's talking to both Israel and Judah here. So here's your proof that, you know, But Judah was also married to Yahweh, not just Israel, okay?
Well, of course they were. And that's, you know, when you catch people in the divorcing, that's what they want to claim is Judah wasn't married to Yahweh, which is just crazy if you read the Exodus account.
Well, they're all Israelites. All of Israel was married to Yahweh. There's no doubt about it. Okay. For I am married to you, and I will take you one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion. And that is to the government, to the power of the kingdom, which is yet to come. Verse 15, and I will give you pastors according to my heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. Praise Yahweh for that, right? Aren't too many. Howard B. Rand, Bertrand Comparay, Sheldon Emery, Dr. Wesley Swift. There have been some really good ones, but the vast majority of what we call Judeo-Christianity are really poor, very, very poor ministers. Verse 16, and it shall come to pass when you be multiplied and increased in the land in those days, says Yahweh, they shall say no more the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, neither shall it come to mind, neither shall they remember it, neither shall they visit it, neither shall that be done anymore. Okay.
Well, I have to say here that I don't think any of us will be seeing the Ark of the Covenant.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see, because Jeremiah actually predicted that it would be seen. Verse 17, at that time they shall call Jerusalem the throne of Yahweh, and all the nations shall be gathered to it, to the name of Yahweh, to Jerusalem, neither shall they walk any more after the imagination of their evil heart. In those days the house of Judah shall walk with the house of Israel. And we're seeing that in America, although most of the Judahites and Israelites don't know who they are. And they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land that I have given for an inheritance to your fathers. Could that be America or Europe? It certainly
could. Well, I think it's definitely America as per Micah chapter 4. And that's, you know, I understand your assertion that Zion often means the government of God.
Uh-huh.
It is not unnoticed, right? It surely does often mean that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we read that Micah chapter 4, it's talking about a particular nation. Well, first it says that the further away his dispersed people go, the stronger a nation they become,
uh-huh.
right? Well, which is evident in history. I mean, from the Ukraine to Germany to Britain to France to America, the further away that we went, the more we did wax strong, the stronger we did wax, and the more successful we were, there's no doubt. And Micah chapter 4, I believe, is absolutely describing this, the creation of America, of this nation.
Right.
And I also believe that I will bring you one of a city and two of a family. This nation is the only nation that was ever created in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we came from all over Germany, from all over France, from all over Britain, from all over Scotland, from all over Ireland, and then later on from the Scandinavian countries and the northern, the southern European countries. A lot of those
right.
Italians that came here were certainly white and not mixed, right?
That's right.
And
that's right.
That the other people that came here and were a lot of them were Israelites too. And this is the only nation to ever.
Yeah.
Been formed that way, exactly as this describes.
I think from 1620 to 1720, something like 40 million refugees, all of them European, all of them European Israelites of the 12 tribes. And so this definitely is the regathering place of all the tribes, right? Okay, let me read verse 18 again. In those days the house of Judah shall walk with the house of Israel, and they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land that I have given for an inheritance to your fathers. Well, that land of the north would be Sweden, Norway, Britain, Ireland, Germany, France. They're all north of Palestine, right?
And this parallels the one-stick prophecy of Ezekiel.
Okay.
It can't possibly mean the Jews, right?
Right.
And it's definitely Europe and then America.
Yes. Absolutely. Verse 19, but I said, how shall I put you among the children and give you a pleasant land, a goodly heritage of the hosts of nations? And I said, you shall call me my father, and shall not turn away from me. Now, of course, since America and our 10-10-10 broadcast, I think, conclusively proved that America was founded as a Christian nation by members of the 12 tribes of Israel. There's simply no doubt about that. And that the Constitution and all the founding documents of America reflect their Christianity. And their most common name for Yahweh was Providence, which is sort of like the Father, but the Provider. Okay, they conceived of God as the Provider. And but they actually perceived this as a personal yet cosmic influence happening in their personal lives and creating this nation of America. Is there any doubt in your mind that the founding fathers had that consciousness, that awareness?
Absolutely. They absolutely did. This was absolutely founded as a Christian nation under the providence of God.
Right.
And they all admitted it.
Yeah. Every single one of them. Even the so-called atheist, he wrote, what, Common Sense? I have a hard time remembering.
Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine.
Common Sense is replete. I didn't get into that in 10-10. I didn't have any time for it, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's replete with references to the Old Testament and references to Scripture.
Yeah.
And Common Sense was what was read in the winter of 1775-76, Common Sense was read throughout America's pulpits.
Right.
It was in thousands of them. Every pastor was reading Common Sense in church on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then although some, I think it was Samuel Adams, accused Thomas Paine of being a non-Christian, nevertheless, Thomas Paine protested that even though I guess Thomas Paine would be considered a deist for the most part, but nevertheless, his problem was he didn't want to have the government run by Baptists, right? nor by Quakers, nor by any other denomination, and that was his basic point. We shouldn't have a particular denomination ensconced by the government, and I think all the founding fathers realized that would be a mistake.
Well, you know, the Christian pastors today are quick to throw the founding fathers under the bus when they're accused of when it's asserted that they weren't Christians. They're quick to throw them under the bus because Christian pastors that have read the founding fathers damn well know that the founding fathers did not like the professional priesthood. They did not like churchianity and by any means. And they knew that churchianity was not found in the Scripture.
Right.
And they made it. John Adams made explicit statements concerning that he did all of the rituals and the rites of the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church, too.
Yes.
They're no different. He wrote them all off. He said they were all silly. None of that's in the Bible.
Yeah.
He made explicit statements.
Right.
And many of them did.
Okay, verse 20. Surely as a wife treacherously departs from her husband, so have you dealt treacherously with me, O house of Israel, says Yahweh. A voice was heard upon the high places, weeping and supplications of the children of Israel, for they have perverted their way, and they have forgotten Yahweh their Elohim. Unfortunately, this is still true today. Only Yahweh's remnant, his Christian identity remnant, are trying to obey the law and recalling his name and all of the covenants which he made with us through Israel. Verse 22, return, you backsliding children, and I will heal your backslidings. Behold, we come to you, for you are Yahweh our Elohim.
And let me say, of course, Yahweh is saying all of this allegorically. He must know that there's no return to the land of Israel, right? And there's no return to him until the gospel reaches the dispersed children of Israel. And that didn't happen until many centuries later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Verse 23, truly in vain is salvation hoped for from the hills. All you Judea Christians, listen, you who disobey the law, truly in vain is salvation hoped for from the hills. If you're up on those hills committing adultery, promoting race mixing and multiculturalism and homosexuality and wars against people that we have no business fighting wars against, Yahweh is not happy with you. Truly in vain is salvation hoped for from the hills and from the multitude of mountains. Truly, Yahweh our God is the salvation of Israel. For shame has devoured the labor of our fathers from our youth, their flocks and their herds, their sons and their daughters. And of course, it's being devoured. All of us, the produce of our labor is being devoured from us as we speak. Verse 25, we lie down in our shame and our confusion covers us, for we have sinned against Yahweh our Elohim. We and our fathers from our youth, even to this day and to this day, and have not obeyed the voice of Yahweh our God.
And I would say that confusion is the result of lying with aliens in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Both mental and what's the terminology Isaiah uses when a mulatto shows its face?
Confusion of faith.
Confusion of faith, right. Very good. Verse 1, chapter 4. If you will return, O Israel, says Yahweh, return to me. And if you will put away your abominations out of my sight, then shall you not remove. Okay, it's very simple. We obey the law. He loves us. If we don't obey the law, he punishes us. Verse 2, and you shall swear, Yahweh lives in truth, in judgment, and in righteousness, and the nations shall bless themselves in him, and in him shall they glory. This is some great preaching. I'm no, I am not a troll. We've had several trolls in the chat room already. It's sort of funny right now. Okay, where was I? Verse 3, for thus says Yahweh to the men of Judah and Jerusalem, break up your fallow ground and sow not among thorns. Circumcise yourselves to Yahweh and take away the foreskins of your heart, you men of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now, I'm wondering, this dispute that Peter and Paul had, where Peter feignedly accepted the house of Israel, the uncircumcision, and yet when in the presence of the circumcision, he pretended not to know the uncircumcision, right? So here he's addressing Judah. Had the Judahites of Christ's time understood Jeremiah 4:4 here, they would realize that the circumcision of the heart is what is necessary, and that hasn't happened yet. And that certainly hadn't happened by the time of Jesus Christ.
Well, that's absolutely true. Circumcision was a sign of a covenant, of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. It was a sign of the covenant. It was a sign of the Abrahamic covenant, and it was a sign between Abraham and Yahweh initially that his descendants would believe Yahweh,
yes,
and the promises in that covenant. They didn't have to do anything else.
Right.
Yeah, you know, there was no other imposition on them at all.
Yeah.
And Paul evokes this concept at Colossians 2:11, but I'll read from verse 9.
Okay.
Talking about Christ, he says, for in him dwells all the fullness of the divinity bodily, and you are complete in him, who is the head of all sovereignty and authority, by whom you also are circumcised with a circumcision not made by hand,
mm-hmm,
in the putting off of the body of the flesh, in the circumcision of the anointed.
Yeah.
And that is this circumcision that Paul is evoking in Jeremiah. It's the circumcision of the foreskin of our heart.
Right.
And not the foreskin of our members, right?
Yes, yes. And so, yeah, this should be what do you call it? Cross reference to Colossians. Did you say 2:9 and 2:11?
2:11, right? 2:11.
Yeah, Let me make a note of that right here. Because, of course, the Judeo-Christians wouldn't make the connection here. And then, of course, neither did Peter, neither did the Judahites of the time, because, you know, obviously the common people would not have had access to the scriptures, and the priests, most of them were probably too corrupt to really pay any attention. Although it's obvious from the book of Luke that a great number of Judahites were expecting the Messiah at that time.
Yeah, but none of them were in the temple.
Yeah, right. The temple was corrupt, right?
None of them were in the priesthood, right?
Right, right.
And except maybe John the Baptist's father, and even he had a hard time, right? That's
right.
Why he was fucked dumb for 6 months.
Well, the people who served in the 24 courses, they were pretty much, you know, common men who, you know, rotated service. They were, you know, they were like your laity, really. They were lay servants who, you know, had a particular function to serve in the temple. And of course,
right. They didn't have any, they didn't necessarily have a knowledge of scripture in that aspect. That they had a job to do in the temple. They showed up, they did their job.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Let me read all of verse 4 again. Circumcise yourselves to Yahweh and take away the foreskins of your heart, you men of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest by fury come forth like fire and burn that none can quench it because of the evil of your doings. Okay. So we've got this prophecy that, you know, our sins are going to attract fire. Verse 5, declare you in Judah and publish in Jerusalem and say, blow you the trumpet in the land, cry, gather together and say, assemble yourselves and let us go into the defensed cities. Of course, our people are not preparing for this tremendous fire that's coming. Verse 6, set up the standard toward Zion, retire, stay not. For I will bring evil from the north and a great destruction. The lion is come up from his thicket, and the destroyer of the nations is on his way. He is gone.
Let me just say that a lot of people might read this and think that Yahweh is playing the role of the destroyer of nations here.
Uh-huh.
And no, the destroyer of nations, and you're right by not reading Gentiles, thank you.
Yes.
The lion is the destroyer in both the 70 and the NAS, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a destroyer of nations is on his way in the NAS version.
Okay. All right, so verse 6, set up the standard towards Zion, retire, stay not, for I will bring evil from the north. Let me read 7 again. The lion has come up from his thicket, and the destroyer of the nations is on his way. He has gone forth from his place to make your land desolate. And your city shall be laid waste without an inhabitant. So it looks like the previous chapter was looking more toward the future, but chapter 4 here is talking about the judgment that's to come upon the city of Jerusalem very shortly.
Yes, definitely. And the Babylonians are what's represented by the destroyer of nations and the lion.
Yes, exactly. Okay, verse 8, for this gird you with sackcloth, lament and howl, for the fierce anger of Yahweh is not turned back from us. And it shall come to pass at that day, says Yahweh, that the heart of the king shall perish, and the heart of the princes, and the priests shall be astonished, and the prophets shall wonder. That we're going to see that again, too.
Now, Jeremiah is writing this at least 25 years before it happens.
Uh-huh, right. And that's why he was so unpopular when he made these pronouncements, verse 10.
Well, he made these, you know, this book is written over that 25-year period, right?
Uh-huh. Yes. And Yahweh instructed him to make these pronouncements to the unbelieving and rebellious house of Judah. Yeah. Verse 10, then said I, Yahweh Elohim, surely you have greatly deceived this people and Jerusalem, saying, you shall have peace, whereas the sword reaches to the soul. At that time shall it be said to this people and to Jerusalem, a dry wind of the high places in the wilderness toward the daughter of my people, not to fan nor to cleanse. Even a full wind from those places shall come to me. Now also will I give sentence against them. okay, so that hot, dry wind, I forget what they call that in the Middle East, it usually portends evil, right? Verse 13, from the perspective of the Israelites here and Judahites. Verse 13, behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his chariots shall be as a whirlwind, and his horses are swifter than eagles. Woe to us, for we are spoiled. O Jerusalem, wash your heart from wickedness, that you may be saved. How long shall your vain thoughts lodge within you? For a voice declares from Dan, and publishes affliction from Mount Ephraim. Make you mention to the nations, behold, publish against Jerusalem, that watchers come from a far country, and give out their voice against the cities of Judah. He wants witnesses.
Now let me say that these watchers, and this is a very poor translation of the word.
Okay.
These are, in the NAS, this is besiegers.
Oh, okay.
And in the Septuagint, it's just bands, like armies, right?
Right.
They are not the watchers of Daniel, which is a totally different Hebrew word.
Uh-huh.
These are besiegers that come from a far country.
Right. Very good. Very good. Verse 17, as keepers of a field are they against her round about, because she has been rebellious against me, says Yahweh. Your way and your doings have procured these things to you. This is your wickedness, because it is bitter, because it reaches to your heart. My bowels, my bowels.
I would really like to preface this next paragraph.
Okay.
From verses 19 through the end of the chapter, before we get into it. Jeremiah 4:19 through 31, right? And I'd like to say something about the way Bertrand Comparé interpreted this. And I'll probably not make any friends with this, but that's just the way it is. You know, and he has a popular sermon. It's on Clifton's website, The Mystery of the Ages.
Okay.
And this is what he writes. Quote, in the original Hebrew, Genesis 1:2, Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, says that the earth became chaotic and empty. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that, but it doesn't really matter how you want to interpret that in Genesis, right? Obviously, as the result of some great cataclysm. And Comparé goes on to say, Jeremiah 4:23-27 was a vision of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then Comparé goes on and quotes these verses. And I would say that this is a great mistake on Comparé's part, right?
Okay.
Because Jeremiah 4:23-27 are merely and explicitly a poetic description of the coming destruction of Jerusalem. And they have nothing to do with anything else, and especially with what happened in Genesis 1:2, right?
Right.
Rather,
right.
Jeremiah borrowed language from Genesis to help illustrate the extent of the coming destruction upon Jerusalem,
uh-huh, okay.
That the earth was void and formless, right?
Right.
When we read the prophets, we have to bear in mind that they were very poetic. They wrote in a language that would resonate in the ears of the people when they heard it. And they wrote, it was an age of poetry anyway. This is the same time that the most famous Greek poets began writing, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, yes,
and epic poetry was basically, all these books of prophecy were written in that same manner. They were very poetic language. And to me, this was an error on Comparé's part to claim that Jeremiah was describing some great pre-Genesis event here. Rather, he's simply borrowing language from Genesis to describe what's happening to Jerusalem.
I've seen this. I guess Comparé is not the only one. It's fairly a common interpretation to project these verses back to Genesis, the Tohu, Bohu language, right? And so,
well, right, and I don't agree with that interpretation of Genesis 1:2, but that's immaterial, right? Right. This is talking about Jerusalem, and it's not talking about Genesis at all.
Yes, yes.
It's language borrowed from Genesis to describe Jerusalem, but that doesn't mean that Jeremiah is describing anything had happened before the creation. Yeah, you know, before the Genesis account began.
Yes. Okay, all right, here we go. Destruction upon destruction is cried, for the whole land is spoiled. Suddenly are my tents spoiled and my curtains in a moment. How long shall I see the standard and hear the sound of the trumpet? For my people are foolish. They have not known me. They are sottish children, and they have none understanding. They are wise to do evil, but to do good they have no knowledge. I beheld the earth, and lo, it was without form and void, and the heavens, and they had no light. I beheld the mountains, and lo, they trembled, and all the hills moved lightly. Certainly earthquakes being implied here. I beheld, and lo, there was no man, and all the birds of the heavens were fled. I beheld, and lo, the fruitful place was a wilderness, and all the cities thereof were broken down at the presence of Yahweh, and by his fierce anger. For thus has Yahweh said, the whole land shall be desolate, and Jerusalem and Judah became desolate, yet will I not make a full end. For this shall the earth mourn, and the heavens above be black, because I have spoken it, I have purposed it, and I will not repent, neither will I turn back from it. Sounds like he has his mind made up, right? Let me read verse 27 again. For thus says Yahweh, the whole land shall be desolate, yet will I not make a full end. Okay, there is going to be a remnant to return from the Babylonian captivity. Verse 29. The whole city shall flee for the noise of the horsemen and bowmen. They shall go into the thickets and climb upon the rocks. Every city shall be forsaken, and not a man dwell therein. And when you are spoiled, that what will you do? Though you clothe yourself with crimson, though you deck with your ornaments of gold, though you rent your face with painting, and in vain shall you make yourself fair, your lovers will despise you. They will seek your life. Isn't that happening to us today? We brought all these lovers from Africa and South America and, from Australia.
And we'll see that more in the next chapter.
Yeah.
And, yes, it's the same pattern.
And they despise us.
It's the same exact pattern
of
first our success when we found a nation on Christian principles.
Right.
And then our arrogance upon our success and then our departure from those principles once we attract all of the aliens into our land. It's an inevitable pattern.
Right. Right. It has repeated so often. It has so And history is full of this pattern being fulfilled time and time again.
Well one thing I plan on illustrating when we start the Revelation commentary next month is that the four horsemen of the apocalypse, they show the development and the decay of the Roman Empire,
uh-huh.
But they also show the development and decay of the American Empire.
Right.
It's the same pattern.
Yeah, and all of the other races we have imported into America now hate us.
Well, right, and this is what we don't learn from history, and this is why history is important. But we still don't learn from it. We keep it, and we don't learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly the liberals and Judeos aren't learning anything. Verse 31, for I have heard a voice as of a woman in travail, and the anguish as of her that brings forth her first child, the voice of the daughter of Zion that bewails herself, that spreads her hand, saying, woe is me now! For my soul is wearied because of murderers. Well, who brought the murderers in?
Well, look at who's murdering. You know, these Negroes and these Mexicans, there is more white crime, white victimization. And we lose as many people by allowing this race mixing and by allowing these brown squat monsters to dwell among us. We lose just as many people as if we were actually facing these people in an all-out war.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. It is literally a race war, but our people aren't aware of it. They simply don't.
Well, right. Every day 100 white people or white women are raped. Every day a few hundred more give themselves willingly.
That's right.
To the enemies. Every day white businesses are robbed. White men are mugged and robbed. White men are murdered. And if you collectively took all of these reports from across the nation and put them together every day, it would sound like the news reports that I heard when I was a kid about Vietnam. 12 missing in action, 56 wounded, 8 dead every day, over and over and over again.
Right, right. And certainly South Africa and the former Rhodesia are up to their necks in this experience.
Well, right. And the only difference here is that there's still a lot more of us than there are of them.
Right, right, right. And so hopefully it'll stay that way. All right, chapter 5, verse 1. Run you to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and see now and know, and seek in the broad places thereof, if you can find a man, if there be any that executes judgment, that seeks the truth, and I will pardon it. Is there, you know, it sounds like Sodom and Gomorrah is asking Lot, Lot was appealing to Yahweh, let me find five good men, and he wasn't able to find any.
Well, right, it's the same exact parallel.
Yeah.
Except for a very sparse remnant of people today, we have the same situation here.
Right, right.
Go to New York City and try to find one righteous man that's living according to the laws of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
You won't. You might find one. You might find one that's trying, and that's only because he's Christian identity.
Yeah. Bill, you're talking about 11 million people.
And that's
one?
The way it is.
Yeah, I agree with you. I hate to agree with you, but I agree with you. Verse 2.
Even the people that are trying, that are good people, are steeped in the ways of the Jews.
That's right.
And following evil.
Mm-hmm.
And not reproaching evil.
That's right. That's right. They're spineless anti-bigots. Verse 2. And though they say Yahweh lives, surely they swear falsely, because they really don't believe in God. They say they do. But they, you know, if you don't believe what Yahweh teaches, then you don't believe in Yahweh.
Well, they believe in the God that they form in their minds.
Yeah.
But he's not the God of the Bible.
That's right. That's right. O Yahweh, are not your eyes upon the truth? You have stricken them, but they have not grieved. You have consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than a rock. They have refused to return.
And that just, how does that not describe our people?
That's right. It does. Absolutely does.
I was looking at pictures yesterday that somebody had sent me from the Midwest in the Great Depression.
Uh-huh.
And the suffering that these pictures portrayed was incredible.
Yeah.
And then we made a deal with Satan, and we pulled out of the Depression to send 500,000 of our troops off to be murdered, right, in the Second World War.
Yeah.
And we've been following the neocons, the Jews, ever since, and their entire agenda. We sold our souls as a nation in 1913 to the devil. And he brought this depression upon us, and then when we agreed to fight all these wars, he gave us this false image of a successful economy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the operation of the beast right there in a nutshell.
Yeah.
The suffering has been incredible the last 100 years, but our people still don't get it. They're still in bed with the devil.
Right.
And how long are they going to stay there?
Yeah.
And continue to suffer?
Well, this illusion of democracy, you know, they feel that they're fighting for democracy, but really what they're fighting for is Jewish tyranny. They just can't see that democracy is just a form of Jewish tyranny. Okay, verse 4. Therefore I said, surely these are poor, they are foolish, for they know not the way of Yahweh, nor the judgment of their God. I will get me to the great men and will speak to them, for they have known the way of Yahweh and the judgment of their God. But these have altogether broken the yoke and burst the bonds. Wherefore a lion out of the forest shall slay them, and a wolf of the evening shall spoil them. A leopard shall watch over their cities. Everyone that goes out from there shall be torn to pieces.
Well, more like a Black Panther, right?
Yeah, right. There you go. Because their transgressions are many, and their backslidings are increased. So, you know, how often are we told that when we disobey the law that Yahweh will use various means to punish us?
And it's very often it's either famine or because of drought or disease or the aliens. And the aliens are our chastisement. Mm-hmm. We deserve, as a nation, as a people, we deserve to be overrun by aliens because we have made this deal with the devil.
Right, right. Okay, verse 7. How shall I pardon you for this? Your children have forsaken me and sworn by them that there are no gods. When I had fed them to the full, they then committed adultery and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses. Okay.
Well, let's describe every church in the nation on Sunday.
Right. And of course, the rabbis do that too. The media never reports the busloads of rabbis to go to the brothels in the Jew-Israeli state. Verse 8, they were as fed horses in the morning, everyone neighed after his neighbor's wife.
Well, Carol, wife swapping, that the entire Jewish culture, right?
Right.
Carol, I remember that movie. I never saw it, but I remember the ads for it. I was a little kid.
Yeah.
That was the 60s.
That's
the way... Right. That was the well, when they started showing that to everyday to people, you know, the Jew won. He won his war over our culture.
Right. That's right. Yeah, he's been winning ever since. Yes, yes. Now, but this is the good verse. Shall I not visit for these things, says Yahweh, and shall not my soul be avenged on a nation as this? Go you up on her walls and destroy, but make not a full end. Thank you, Yahweh, for not making a full end. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Take away her battlements, for they are not Yahweh's. For the house of Israel and the house of Judah have dealt very treacherously against me, says Yahweh. Now, in comparing these injunctions by Jeremiah against our people versus the ones of Ezekiel. I think the first half of the book of Ezekiel is all of these, injunctions against the children of Israel and of course other people too.
But right, it's an indictment.
Yes.
It's a hugely incredible indictment.
Right, yeah, Ezekiel's one long indictment until the very last chapters, right? Now here Jeremiah is simply repeating the indictment of Ezekiel, right?
Well, actually, Ezekiel repeated and elaborated upon Jeremiah.
Right, yeah, right. But we did Ezekiel first.
but yes, Ezekiel is, I'm sorry, Jeremiah is one long indictment against the people of Judah and Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it goes on, chapter 19, 18, the good and the bad figs, and it goes on all the way up to chapter 31.
Right, right. But Ezekiel is addressed primarily to the house of Israel. Jeremiah is addressed primarily to the house of Judah. But nevertheless, they spare no invectives against both houses, okay, because both houses are guilty. Verse 11, for the house of Israel and the house of Judah have dealt very treacherously against me, says Yahweh. They have belied Yahweh and said, it is not he, neither shall evil come upon us, neither shall we see sword nor famine. And we're all saved. Verse 13, and the prophets shall become wind, and the word is not in them. Thus shall it be done.
Well, that probably should say windbags.
Yeah, that's right. Wherefore, thus says Yahweh, God of hosts, because you speak this word, behold, I will make my words in your mouth fire, and this people wood, and it shall devour them. Verse 15, lo, I will bring a nation upon you from afar, O house of Israel, says Yahweh.
Now this O house of Israel is really talking to Judah, right?
Yeah, right.
Because the rest of Israel is already deported, right?
Right, right, yes. Yeah, and these houses, and the word Israel always applies to all 12 tribes, okay?
Right, that's the point I wanted to make.
Yeah, yeah, and usually it's stated as all Israel, you know, when it's talking about the two different houses. But even the Judahites coming back from the Babylonian captivity, they refer to themselves as Israel. Okay, so they never dropped the name Israel. Okay. Lo, I will bring a nation upon you from afar, O house of Israel, says Yahweh. It is a mighty nation. It is an ancient nation, a nation whose language you know not, neither understand what they say. Their quiver is an open sepulcher. They are all mighty men. Now, of course, he's talking about the Babylonians. And Babylon, the city of Babylon, goes is very ancient already at this point. So these words are exactly true. Although the nation, the kingdom of Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar and his father, that is a recent. How should I put it?
Right, Babylon went through a lot of changes.
Right,
and originally the empire was of Ham. Right.
Right.
Cush, the son of Nimrod, was the son of Cush. He was a Hamite, and that's why the Hebrews of old called it Cush.
Uh huh.
And that's where Moses went to get a wife.
Yes.
And the Greeks called it the Ethiopia of the East in the most ancient writings. But that the Chaldees that came to control Babylon actually came from Syria. They were Aramaeans.
Okay. Okay. And the Chaldees, what, they were priests? Is that what the word?
Well, you know, they were a race of people. They were a tribe of people. However, they're most famous for their priests. So we often see the Chaldees as the priests, where really the Chaldees were an entire tribe of people,
uh-huh.
and their priests were just happened to be famous, right?
Right.
As astronomers and astrologers.
Right. Right. Okay. Do you think Balaam? The prophet, was he a Chaldee, do you think? It would have been later in time, because he seems to have been kind of an independent wandering priest, okay?
Well, you know, there had to be these people with this knowledge that the sons of Noah had, that had to persist throughout Mesopotamia,
mm-hmm.
for quite some period of time, before it was finally paganized and elaborated on to the point where it was unrecognizable, right?
Right, right.
But I mean, each of the nations, if you read their laws, if you read their religion, their religious inscriptions, each of them had great elements of what we would consider through the Hebrew Bible, through the lens of the Bible, to be true.
Right, right. Because Balaam, we're not told what his ancestry is. And he just seems to be one of these wandering priests, of which there were many in those days, okay? So he could have been a Chaldee. Okay, verse 17. And they shall eat up your harvest and your bread, which your sons and your daughters should eat. They shall eat up your flocks and your herds. They shall eat up your vines and your fig trees. They shall impoverish your fenced cities wherein you trusted with the sword. Of course, our substance is being taken away from us. And our children are being disinherited right now. Verse 18.
Well, let me say something real quick, Eli.
Yeah.
But he very well may have been a Chaldee, because he's Balaam, the son of Beor of Pethor, P-E-T-H-O-R.
Okay.
Pethor is in Mesopotamia.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Very good. Verse 18. Nevertheless, in those days, says Yahweh, I will not make a full end with you. So this is the third time he stated this, and praise Yahweh for that. Verse 19. And it shall come to pass when you shall say, what does Yahweh, our Elohim, all these things do to us? Why does he do these things to us? Then shall you answer them, like as you have forsaken me and served strange gods in your land, so shall you serve strangers in a land that is not yours.
And that shows that the children of Israel were prophesied to adopt and keep, or keep, right, because
yeah.
they already adopted it, paganism mm-hmm. in the land of their captivity.
Yeah.
And this answers the question that I often get on my open forums or in tight chats and things like that. Why did our Germanic ancestors not worship Yahweh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is why.
Yeah.
They were told they would serve strange gods
right.
in a land that was not theirs.
Yes, and somewhere it'll be coming up where Yahweh says through Jeremiah, I will take my name out of your mouths, okay, because they have blasphemed his name. Verse 20, declare this in the house of Jacob and publish it in Judah, saying, hear now this, O foolish people, and without understanding, which have eyes and see not, which have ears and hear not. Fear you not me, says Yahweh, will you not tremble at my presence, which have placed the sand for the bound of the sea by a perpetual decree that it cannot pass? And though the waves thereof toss themselves, yet can they not prevail? Though they roar, yet can they not pass over it? But this people has a revolting and a rebellious heart. They are revolted and gone. Neither say they in their heart, let us now fear Yahweh our Elohim, that gives rain both the former and the latter in his season. He reserves to us the appointed weeks of the harvest. Your iniquities have turned away these things, and your sins have withheld good things from you. For among my people are found wicked men. They lay wait as he that sets snares. They set a trap. They catch men. As a cage is full of birds, so are their houses full of deceit. Therefore they are become great and waxed rich. Of course, that
now this can only describe the usurers.
Right, okay.
But this can't describe anybody but the usurers.
Okay.
And we know who they are, right?
Right. Well, those usurers, the Jewish usurers, always have Gentile, quote-unquote, Gentile managers, right? Branch managers and clerks, right? Verse 28, they are waxed fat. They shine, yea, they overpass the deeds of the wicked. They judge not the cause of the fatherless, yet they prosper, and the right of the needy do they not judge. And I would say, as it's often occurred to me, that these international bankers in New York City, with all of the billions that they have at their disposal, do you think they could make one homeless shelter? With all the money they have?
No, they want the government to do it.
Right. Right.
The government has to make the homeless shelter, and that way the middle class pays for it. The taxpayer, the people that pay most of the taxes end up paying for it.
Yeah, I mean, they have absolutely no charity, even with all those billions of dollars. Verse 29, shall I not visit for these things? Says Yahweh, shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? Yes, it will. Verse 30. A wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. The prophets prophesied falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means, and my people love to have it so, and what will you do in the end thereof? Okay? And the priests bear rule by their means, which is by their own rituals and teachings as opposed to Yahweh's, of course.
And the average person is so far off base with how society should operate. Yeah, you know, like I've said it before, that guy, I never remember his name, that said Christianity is a great religion, but it's never been practiced.
Oh, yeah,
their minds just have to be erased.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to wipe the slate clean.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen.
Right, exactly. All right, chapter 6, verse 1. O you children of Benjamin, gather yourselves to flee out of the midst of Jerusalem and blow the trumpet in Tekoa. And set up a sign of fire in Beth Hakerem. For evil appears out of the north and great destruction. I have likened the daughter of Zion to a comely and delicate woman. The shepherds with their flocks shall come to her. They shall pitch their tents against her round about. They shall feed everyone in his place.
Now let me, when did a Jew ever feed anyone?
Right.
And it's only the white race that has ever fed any of the other races
exactly. All
throughout our history.
That's right.
We have never had a picture in history of Negroes or Arabs feeding Chinamen or white people, right?
Right.
I mean, it's only our race that has ever fed anybody.
Exactly.
And that, you know, our actions as a race proves that we're the people of Yahweh.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Verse 4. Prepare you war against her, arise and let us go up at noon. Woe to us, for the day goes away, for the shadows of the evening are stretched out. Arise and let us go by night, and let us destroy her palaces.
And that's what the other races do. We feed them, and they want to make war against us.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, even though they feed off of us, they hate us.
Yeah, all we do is strengthen them with our handouts. And that's what the welfare state has resulted, right?
Exactly.
Because they hate us even more. The more we feed them, the more they hate us. Verse 6, for thus has Yahweh of hosts said, hew down trees and cast a mount against Jerusalem. This is the city to be visited. She is holy oppression. in the midst of her. And we're facing tremendous oppression all over again. Verse 7, as a fountain casts out her waters, so she casts out her wickedness. Violence and spoil is heard in her. Before me continually is grief and wounds. Be you instructed, O Jerusalem, lest my soul depart from you, lest I make you desolate, a land not inhabited. Thus said Yahweh of hosts, they shall thoroughly glean the remnant of Israel as a vine. Turn back your hand as a grape gatherer into the baskets. Okay? And as we've found throughout history, that remnant, Yahweh always preserves that remnant who do obey his laws. Okay, verse 10.
And haven't they gleaned the rest of our nation now?
I mean, it's a
continuous... They're on their way to doing it. They've gleaned everything they can.
That's right, that's right. To whom shall I speak and give warning that they may hear? Behold, their ear is uncircumcised, and they cannot hear. And the more I read this word uncircumcised from the Old Testament, the more I realize that it means that their ear is that... That they simply do not hearken to the law, okay? That their heart is uncircumcised, their ear is uncircumcised.
The circumcision, as I said before, was a token of our belief in Yahweh's promise in the Abrahamic covenant.
Right, right,
right. So if our ears are uncircumcised, we're not believing what we're hearing.
Yes.
We can read the Bible, and if we don't believe it, we're going to continue to sin.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And they cannot hearken. Behold, the word of Yahweh is to them a reproach. They have no delight in it. Therefore, I am full of the fury of Yahweh. I am weary with holding in. I will pour it out upon the children abroad and upon the assembly of young men together. For even the husband with the wife shall be taken, the aged with him that is full of days. Now, Yahweh is telling us he's getting really angry with you people, with us, right? Verse 12. And their houses shall be turned to others with their fields and wives together. For I will stretch out my hand upon the inhabitants of the land, says Yahweh. For from the least of them, even to the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness. And from the prophet even to the priest, everyone deals falsely. They have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. And, of course, that means that they half-heartedly make peace. Verse 15, were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall. At the time that I visit them shall they be cast down. Thus says Yahweh, stand you in the ways and see and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And walk therein, and you shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. They were liberals, all right? They didn't want to return back to their old-time religion.
Well, right, and peace, peace, when there is no peace. When you let all these aliens live among you, and you're not hearkening to the words of Yahweh, when you hate the words of Yahweh, and you deny that separatism and racial integrity are in the Bible, well, with these aliens among you, you could try all the peace you want. You'll never have it.
That's right.
And that's what we're experiencing right now.
It's like these anti-nukes lunatics who put up signs saying, nuclear-free zone, right? As if an atom bomb is going to notice where a sign might be. Verse 17, rather. Also I set watchmen over you, saying, hearken to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, we will not hearken. Therefore hear, you nations, and know, O congregation, what is among them. Hear, O earth, behold, I will bring evil upon this people, even the fruit of their thoughts, because they have not hearkened to my words, nor to my law, but rejected. And here's another instance of the word evil, where it's not Yahweh doing evil. He is simply bringing judgment, righteous judgment, upon the people.
Well, right. In the eyes of the people, it's going to be evil. But
right.
It sounds like Mexicans to me.
Right. Verse 20. To what purpose comes there to me incense from Sheba? and the sweet cane from a far country. Your burnt offerings are not acceptable, nor your sacrifices sweet to me. Therefore, thus says Yahweh, behold, I will lay stumbling blocks before this people, and the fathers and the sons together shall fall upon them. The neighbor and his friend shall perish. Thus says Yahweh, behold, a people comes from the north country, and a great nation shall be raised from the sides of the earth. They shall lay hold on bow and spear. They are cruel and have no mercy. Their voice roars like the sea, and they ride upon horses, set in array as men for war against you, O daughter of Zion. We have heard the fame thereof. Our hands wax feeble. Anguish has taken hold of us, and pain as of a woman in travail. Go not forth into the field, nor walk by the way, for the sword of the enemy and fear is on every side. O daughter of my people, gird you with sackcloth and wallow yourself in ashes, make you mourning as for an only son. Most bitter lamentation, for the spoiler shall suddenly come upon us. Now, it's interesting to compare what happened at Nineveh, because Nineveh did repent. But, of course, they followed, the people there followed after the leader who told everybody to get dressed in sackcloth and put ashes on your faces, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously the leadership here in Jerusalem did not do that and did not set the proper example. Verse 27, I have set you for a tower and a fortress among my people that you may know and try their way. They are all grievous revolters, walking with slanders. They are brass and iron. They are all corruptors. The bellows are burned. The lead is consumed of the fire. The founder melts in vain, for the wicked are not plucked away. Reprobate silver shall men call them, because Yahweh has rejected them. Okay, so it sounds like judgment is inevitable.
Well, when judgment is inevitable, we're not to take up arms, right? We're to repent. That always comes first, and that's what these people are being told here. That the people of Nineveh, the destruction of Nineveh had already been foretold in Isaiah. It was a given fact. I think the people were to repent in order to survive the destruction of their city. But just like Jerusalem, that destruction was already decreed.
Yes.
And even in the book of Jonah, it says that a short time later or a certain number of days later, Nineveh was destroyed.
Yes. Okay, well, that takes us through chapter 6. And next week, we will continue with chapter 7. And you know, there's more to the story of the taking of the house of Judah and, of course, Benjamin into the Babylonian captivity. And Jeremiah has many more prophecies of the end times in store for us as well in chapter 31, the great prophecy of the new covenant. Can't wait to get to that part. But as we continue here, we have to study here all the details of the Babylonian captivity and why it took place. And we as Israelites have to learn that we should not do these things again. Okay, this Old Testament is here for a reason.
well, right, 100 years ago, this would have been a great message for people to understand. Now it's too late. We've done them again, so we can compare the results.
Right. Yeah. Well,
because they're coming.
Yeah, and as you're saying that, I'm thinking Christian identity is like the Jeremiah of today, right? They don't want to listen. They don't want to hear it. They're perfectly comfortable with the way things are, so judgment is inevitable. There's no escape. So the only those remnant will escape who call upon his name and obey his laws. So that's our message, folks. That we can't stress that enough, because that is the people who were saved in these days and who were taken into the Babylonian captivity for their good. We're like them. So we will get through the judgment day for our good and for our ultimate restoration. Okay. So,
well, many of the Ninevites ended up as Scythian slaves and became Slavs, right?
Okay. Right.
Or were actually taken away by the Scythians and became Germans.
Uh huh. Right. Yeah, and so you know, some of those were not Israelites. Some of them were Japhethites and other types of Shemites as well. But that's okay. You know, those are people that we're allowed to intermarry with. Okay. All right. So let's continue this next Friday with Chapter 7, and tomorrow we should be done with the Epistles of John. Okay?
Praise Yahweh.
Looking forward to tomorrow night. Thank you all for listening. Praise Yahweh. Yahweh bless everybody.